B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Friday, December 9th, 2016. After urging from congressional Democrats, President Obama has ordered the intelligence communities to cough up a report on alleged Russian interference in the American election cycle this year. But it's going to be a secret report. Isn't that nice? The White House announced this morning through advisor Lisa Monaco that the president has ordered intelligence agencies to produce a full report on Russian efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election. And he directed them to develop a list of lessons learned from the broad campaign the U.S. has accused Russia of carrying out to steal emails, publish their contents, and probe the vote counting system. Now, as you know, I remain highly skeptical of these claims, and I will change my position if the evidence is presented. But so far, this is based on a series of rumors and allegations, and I think it was a fear-mongering campaign of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Now, we've got complications from the FBI director's unpredictable moves back in July, saying no charges, no investigation on the email scandal. Then suddenly, you know, the week before the election, the twin announcements that Anthony Weiner's computer has provided new data, and then, never mind, there's nothing there. That really, you know, seriously was a kind of prevarication that I consider to be more, have more of a negative impact on the Clinton campaign than anything that we know so far that the Russians did. So the FBI also has an active investigation of the hacking underway, but the agencies are concerned about revealing their sources and methods if they share with the public what this review produces. And I'm sorry, they don't have to tell us explicitly, you know, what system they used and this, that, and the other thing, but they can provide substantive evidence, as the NSA's former technical director, Bill Binney, has said to me. The NSA is sitting on any proof of hacking that occurred at the DNC and to the Podesta emails, and in a hot minute, they could share that information with us if they so desired. And I don't think they do. So the White House then followed up by trying to reassure the unstable Donald Trump that this is not an effort to challenge the outcome of the election. That's what a petition that I talked about yesterday is hoping to do. Eric Schultz, Deputy White House press mouth, said, "We have acknowledged who won the election. It wasn't the candidate the president campaigned for. He's gone out of his way to ensure a smooth transition of power." But Schultz went on to say that the government did not detect any increased cyber activity on Election Day itself. And so, like many, I was shocked when Jill Stein made her case for the recounts in Wisconsin based on these unproven assertions of Russian interference. And if they're willing to disclose to us that there was no hacking-like activity aimed at voting tabulators or other election networks, that's a very significant admission. And so I remain quite dubious about this whole thing. But Lisa Monaco said the review will be classified and delivered to lawmakers so that they can selectively leak from it as they have to date. And I have no confidence that this is going to lead us into anything worthwhile. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, and this is her own line, yesterday she showed up at the U.S. Capitol nominally to praise the retiring Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid, the fighter who is going back to Searchlight, Nevada, just about 10 years too late. At any rate, she weighed in on fake news. She issued a call to action against the epidemic of fake news. She said that fake news has real-world consequences, alluding to the incident last Sunday in which a man drove from North Carolina to Washington and opened fire at the Comet Ping Pong Pizza Parlor in Northwest Washington, D.C., after reading a news story that said the pizzeria was harboring children as part of a sex ring led by Hillary Clinton. No one was injured. Now, we've got to parse this very carefully, because I have seen nothing to prove the ravings of Alex Jones and others that this Pizzagate scandal is real and that there is active pedophilia that connects in some way to Hillary Clinton. Now, I'm not saying it couldn't be true. I'm saying I haven't seen any proof so far. And Bill Clinton has connections to Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted pedophile, and so does Donald Trump. But what's interesting, I put out to listeners last week that if you can send me links to credible information about Pizzagate, that I will pursue them. I got one email with 11 or 12 links provided by a person who uses the email address of the digit 1. So, 1, thank you for sending the information. But it was really a bunch of tweets based on information from John Podesta's emails, and apparently he does have a collection of pictures of naked children. Is it pornography? I haven't seen it. I don't know. But I watched part of an Alex Jones episode, which he released before the election, where he just talks in circles and, you know, doesn't name his sources, you know, secret people at the New York Police Department or in Washington, D.C. And Alex Jones apparently reported that this Comet Ping Pong Pizza Parlor has a basement and that the pedophile parties were going on in the pizza parlor's basement. Well, there is no basement at Comet Ping Pong. And so because of the many reports, and because I'm always suspicious when the corporate media goes out of its way to describe something as fake or as a hoax, like the Pizzagate story, my skepticism causes me to go to people who I trust. And Nick Bryant is the guy who wrote the book about the Franklin scandal. He wrote stories that I find credible about Jeffrey Epstein and his party jet that Bill Clinton rode on many times. By the way, Alex Jones says that Hillary Clinton took 6 trips on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. But that doesn't prove anything. And the fact that people believe that pizza orders were codes for some kind of, you know, description of young people who are being preyed upon for sex, it could be true. But I haven't seen anything that is persuasive. So I reached out to Nick Bryant, and I just asked him, what is your take? And he said, Peter, I'm not sure what to make of it. I think Podesta's art collection is certainly suspect, but so far there are no victims, at least yet. And you can't have a pedophile network without victims. Signed, Nick. So, again, if you have information that you find credible, sources beyond Alex Jones, I'm happy to take a look at it. But so far, I don't find anything of substance in these claims. Glenn Greenwald has done a great job in a takedown of the fake news that MSNBC spread, claiming that the WikiLeaks information, the releases of the DNC hack and also the Podesta emails, that they were tainted because the documents had been doctored. Remember hearing that? That was a widespread meme. And the idea was that if you supported Hillary Clinton, you would never even look at the John Podesta emails because you couldn't believe them, because they had been fabricated or manipulated. Well, this was a lie that was spun up by a Clinton supporter. Now, there's no indication that this gentleman was part of the Clinton campaign. I want to be clear about that. But he created a fake file, what purported to be a transcript of one of Hillary Clinton's $225,000 speeches to Goldman Sachs. And he released it. And MSNBC picked up on it, and they put their intelligence expert, Malcolm Nance, on TV. And then he tweeted out, official warning, Podesta emails are already proving to be riddled with obvious forgeries and black propaganda, not even professionally done. And as Greenwald details, Joy Reid and other anchors on MSNBC then amplified this. They tweeted it out. Thousands and thousands of people. One of these messages got 42,000 views or shares. And so this was a false report. It's fake news. And it's fake news that was intended to help the Clinton campaign. And when MSNBC picked up on it, they spread it around. They have never, according to Greenwald, acknowledged that they broadcast false information, and they have not corrected or retracted these false reports that go back to early November. And so I want to encourage you to follow the link in the show file and read Glenn Greenwald's very well-reasoned and argued piece. And he exposes a guy named Marco Chacon, a self-professed creator of viral fake news, who was, either a volunteer or part of the David Brock troll team, because he, earlier in the campaign, was hammering Sanders supporters and Trump supporters. He specialized in blatantly fake anti-Clinton frauds with the goal of tricking her opponents into citing them. Quite Machiavellian, Marco Chacon. But he then admitted on November 21st in an article at the Daily Beast that he forged the Goldman Sachs speech transcript. And that's what became fodder for the so-called experts on MSNBC to spread this false information around. And in his comment about this, the guy known as Chacon said, at the end of the day, did it change anything? I don't know. I think I inadvertently hurt WikiLeaks, which I'm not proud of, but I'm not too sorry about either. I suspect that some people came to realize they were believing in fake things. Now, you can dislike WikiLeaks, particularly if you're a partisan supporter of Hillary Clinton and you think that Julian Assange is her sworn enemy. But let's be factual. We have not found a single case where WikiLeaks released information that was found to be fabricated or doctored. And that is the claim that the Clinton campaign relied on and lied about, and then they linked it to the Kremlin and created this overarching conspiracy theory. And, of course, Hillary's people all say they don't believe conspiracy theories, you know, like rigged elections and things like that. Over at Counterpunch, Jeffrey St. Clair does a good job, and I thank Carl Howard for tipping me to this. He, in a kind of rambling piece, takes down the Washington Post for its Thanksgiving Day story about this group called Prop or Not, Propaganda or Not. The article was written by the Post's technology reporter, Craig Timberg, who, according to St. Clair, has familial ties to some of the nastier creatures in the D.C. cloak and dagger scene, including Oliver North. So Timberg wrote this story, which refers to but does not name lefty publications and outlets like Counterpunch, Truthdig, and Consortium News, Bob Perry's outlet. There were others, but those are the ones I can remember. So the Post didn't name them, but if you went to the Prop or Not website, which doesn't give you any indication of who's behind it or what criteria were used to tag or blacklist leftist media outlets, well, this was a fact-free exercise in publishing. It's not journalism. Let me quote St. Clair. The piece was an overhyped and factually deficient story constructed out of tissues of conjecture by nebulous and biased sources. For his part, Timberg didn't even bother to contact the targets of Prop or Not's smears. In other words, Timberg's scoop violated almost every tenet of standard journalistic practice. So now, the Post did not retract or correct the story. They discreetly added a kind of editor's note to the Timberg article on their website. And they acknowledged that a number of the sites that were outed or tagged or blacklisted by Prop or Not, have objected to being included on the list, and some of the sites, as well as others not on the list, have publicly challenged the group's methodology and conclusions. The post, which did not name any of the sites, does not itself vouch for the validity of Prop or Not's findings regarding any individual media outlet, nor did the article purport to do so. Then why the fuck did you run it? And I want to add that Marty Baron, who picked up a journalism prize, he's now one of the top editors at the Washington Post, and he got a prize for his work exposing the corrupt Archdiocese of Boston in the pedophile cases. But he had the gall to tweet promos for Tim Berg's story. And this really, I think, is a reflection on the decline of the Washington Post and its effort to curry favor and actually provide fodder for the next round of McCarthy-like suppression of news and journalism in this country. It is extremely dangerous. Also on the fake news front, I'm linking to a good piece that Kevin Gostola published the other day at Shadowproof, and he exposed that CBS News ran a story about a BS detector. Now, let me pause for a second to say that for years I have joked about going to Radio Shack and buying a BS detector, and that I have it here at the studio and it goes off when there's just too much BS present. But there is a browser extension attempting to deal with fake news called a BS detector, and it can be run on Chrome or Firefox browsers. CBS claimed that this relies upon a constantly updated list of known fake news sites, propaganda mills, and promoters of kooky conspiracy theories. But, says Gostola, CBS was wrong. It's not constantly updated. It was created to make fun of Facebook. And the developer, Daniel Sidoradsky, said that he scraped together data that included sites which are not fake news, and one of those was Kevin Gostola's site, Shadowproof. And the BS detector displays a red banner that indicates a news website is not a reliable news source. And at the time that Gostola investigated, it was flagging Consortium News, Naked Capitalism, Truth Out, and Truth Dig. And Gostola writes, CBS, as well as the tech websites, never thought to question the criteria or process for including websites in the extension. They presumed all the websites were actual fake news websites. And this is a very serious problem, because the corporate media is too often in league with the political leadership. And this is clearly an effort to snuff out critical commentary that's coming from the American left. And when you couple it with the watch list of lefty professors that has just surfaced, and you look at the authoritarian bent of a Donald Trump and the people he's recruited, like Jeff Sessions, we're heading for a world of hurt, friends. Every day I like to thank the people who support my work here, providing independent commentary from yours truly. And people do that by subscribing. And I want to name names: Bill Goodacre, Tracy Williams, the folks at DGL Engraving. And Susan Vian just took out she just renewed an annual subscription. Susan, I really appreciate your support, and I appreciate all of my subscribers. I invite you to become one. Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click the menu button, pull down, click Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page. You got various options there. And as I've mentioned, if you want to give a gift of a Peter B. Collins subscription, just email me and I'll set it up for you, peter@peterbcollins.com. And while we're talking about actions like this, I want to mention that Roger Shuler, the courageous journalist who's exposed the corruption in Alabama at the Legal Schnauzer blog, he and his wife Carol are living on the edge in a flea bag motel in Missouri. They're living week to week. And I'm not the only one, but many friends of theirs have suggested that they set up a crowdfunding campaign. And so there is now a GoFundMe campaign for Roger and Carol Shuler. I'm linking to it in the show file for the podcast. I set an example, made a $100 contribution yesterday. And if you are able, I encourage you to do whatever you can to assist Roger and Carol Shuler at their GoFundMe site. So is Donald Trump going to be also known as the cyber bully in chief? This week, you may recall, after watching a union leader named Chuck Jones from Indianapolis, he represents the workers at the Carrier furnace plant there. It's not an air conditioning plant, Donald. And he was on CNN, where he honestly reported that Donald Trump lied his ass off about the number of jobs that he had actually shamed Carrier into keeping in Indianapolis. The number is 800, but Trump was using figures of 1,100, and I think at one point he said 2,000. And so Chuck Jones told the truth about the fake news that Donald Trump created and that the media accepted at the Carrier plant near Indianapolis. A couple of minutes later, Trump started tweeting critical comments about Chuck Jones, like, "Chuck Jones, who's president of Steelworkers 1999, has done a terrible job representing workers. No wonder companies flee country." Now, this is really snarky, and it's dangerous because of the power that the president has. And he's not even president yet. But Nicole Wallace, who is a fairly straight shooter, she was a communications director for George W. Bush, she said, "When you attack a man for living an ordinary life in an ordinary job, it's bullying. It's cyberbullying. This is a strategy to bully somebody who dissents. That's what is dark and disturbing." And Robert Dalek, presidential historian, said, "This is beneath the dignity of the office. He doesn't even seem to understand that." And if we're going to have a president who engages in these very personal kinds of attacks and battles, verbal battles, it's going to be a long, long 4 years. And Chuck Jones, is that his name, Chuck? Yeah. He's pretty interesting and has a sense of equanimity, I would say. He said that he and the president-elect have been on the same side when it comes to trying to protect the livelihoods of blue-collar workers. And he said he'd happily collaborate with Trump to try to save the other 550 Carrier jobs that are still scheduled to be moved to Mexico. If, this is a quote, "if in fact he called today and said, 'Let's get together to save 500 jobs,' I'd be glad to do anything I possibly could to work with him in any fashion." "But I don't foresee that happening," said the union leader. Goldman Sachs has another friend in the Trump administration. Yes, the candidate who championed the interests of white working class people has once again thumbed his nose at them and named the president of Goldman Sachs, whose name is Cohn, what's his first name here, Gary Cohn, to the White House Economic Council. And he's just another, I don't know if he's a billionaire or a multimillionaire, but this is going to be a cabinet by and for the wealthiest segment of the American population. It's really amazing. And we haven't heard much of a peep out of those hardworking blue-collar workers who scorned Hillary Clinton in favor of the man who they think's going to come to their rescue. Also, just another insult, the Small Business Administration will be run by Linda McMahon, a pro wrestling, she and her husband, I think his name is Vince, own the World Wrestling Entertainment empire. They're only worth $500 million. And she paid $7 million into the Trump campaign, and out of it, she gets the appointment to run the Small Business Administration. Just another part of the wrecking crew. Is Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder and another billionaire, thinking about heading into politics? Well, there's an interesting story that has surfaced as the result of a lawsuit that has exposed some back-and-forth communications, text messages, between Zuckerberg and Mark Andreessen. And Andreessen was one of the early developers of a web browser. And it's 20 years ago, and I can't remember the name of the browser. But anyway, Andreessen is one of the investors and serves, I believe, as a director on the board at Facebook. And so does former White House Chief of Staff Erskine Bowles. And so Andreessen and Bowles, in cahoots with Zuckerberg, were trying to rewrite the corporate bylaws to enable Mark Zuckerberg to take a leave of absence for up to 2 years to perform public service. And that's not defined any further than that. And still retain control of Facebook. Now, Facebook and Google have capital structures that give the founders incredible control and lock out the average shareholders from any real vote or control in these respective companies. And so Bowles and Andreessen appear to be aware of the optics of this. And Andreessen describes Bowles as massively uncomfortable with Zuckerberg going off on leave with no involvement by the board and retaining control. Andreessen went on, he's worried it's the thing people will point to on announcement and say, what the fuck are you guys doing agreeing to this? Particularly since he thinks government service would require you to give up control of Facebook anyway, and it's a moot point. So a little bit later, mid-April of this year, the committee that these men were on recommended that the board approve the new system. And according to the documents, Andreessen texted Zuckerberg, the cat's in the bag and the bag's in the river. And if you don't understand that, well, Zuckerberg didn't either. He said, does that mean the cat's dead? And Andreessen said, mission accomplished, and added a smiley face. Weird. Weird. Portland has done a great thing. The city council has passed the first-of-its-kind measure that would levy a tax on public companies whose CEO-to-workers pay ratio is more than 100 to 1. The overpaid executives, I guess the company would pay the tax on their behalf, but this seeks to address income inequality. The money would go to pay for programs for homeless people and is expected to raise about $2.5 million a year. Nike is the first company that comes to mind based in Oregon that might be impacted by this. In Ohio, the Republicans in the legislature are really salivating, hoping to put a law in the pipeline that the Supreme Court would use to overturn Roe versus Wade, the abortion rights bill ruling. And they are doing this because, well, they think Donald Trump's going to put an anti-abortion justice on the Supreme Court, and that sooner or later, even a bill like this that they know is unconstitutional on the face of it might be the pretext to overturn Roe versus Wade. And it remains to be seen if John Kasich will sign this or another bill they passed this week. The first one is the most restrictive. It says if a doctor detects a fetal heartbeat and performs an abortion, that doctor would be subject to criminal charges. But there's another bill that they've also passed, which sets a 20-week limit on abortion rights. This fetal heartbeat is roughly 6 weeks of gestation. And so they're really gunning for a fight. And what's interesting is Mike Ganadakis of Ohio Right to Life says his group is neutral on the bill, the heartbeat bill, because he fears that the law would be struck down and that it might even strengthen Roe versus Wade. We will be inviting nothing more than damage and danger to all we've accomplished for the past 40 years. And a pro-abortion activist said these types of bans are completely unconstitutional and have very little chance of standing up in court. But it feeds the base. It panders to the Christian right, and that's what they like. In Canada, efforts to pass a carbon tax are now being stalled because there is pushback as they eye their neighbor to the south and say, well, if Trump is going to go full throttle on coal mining and carbon emissions and ignore climate change, then that's going to put Canada at an economic disadvantage. There is a rational argument there. But the young Trudeau, the new Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, is trying to negotiate his way past it. Also with an eye on Trump, the Iranians are feverishly making oil deals while the sanctions are off, fearing that Donald Trump will reimpose sanctions soon after he takes office. Impeachment has proceeded in Seoul, South Korea, where the president, Park Geun-hye, was notified today that the vote has been taken. And I guess there is a requirement that the equivalent of their Supreme Court has to take the final step to remove her from office. But that could occur shortly. And the prime minister, Hwang Kyo-yeon, will serve as acting president, and there may be new elections in as soon as 60 days. Just a little statistical footnote. Today is the day of some infamy. 1,001 Americans have been killed so far this year by police. Last year, the number was higher. I think it was over 1,100 for the year. So that may be minor consolation. And finally today, John Glenn has passed away at the age of 95. He was one of the very first astronauts to orbit the Earth. He went on to become a United States Senator from my home state of Ohio, and he also ran for president once. He was a middle-of-the-road guy, a real gentleman, in my opinion. I didn't always agree with John Glenn, but I found it useful that a guy who'd been to outer space and had a bigger picture of the Earth and the politics of the United States was serving in the U.S. Senate. And I think that he generally served with distinction, even though there are a few issues along the way where I had some deep disagreements. John Glenn, happy trails to you. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast. It's available free every day on YouTube. Spread the word, will you? I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.